Blog Talk Radio.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. Jack, you're on air sign up ahead.
Okay.
Here we go.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to our weekly episode of School Matters. Every Thursday, we discuss relevant issues that impact educational opportunities for young people and provide pertinent, actionable opportunities for real change.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson of the Veronica Branch. Welcome to another episode of School Matters. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, and it seems that all hell may be breaking loose in the educational realm from the national level down to the local level. And we're here to talk about that. The nominee for education, Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, and how that may impact you and your community directly. Welcome to the show, Veronica Brands.
Hello, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm going to ask you a question before, I mean, you know, I don't know that I can do much about it, but do you hear me clearly, and was the intro clear? Because the internet on my end sounds a little jumpy, but if it's clear to you, then we'll keep pushing.
Yeah, what it did when it came on, it kind of like faded in and out, like got a little lower. I mean,
okay,
I can hear you.
But outside of it being lower, it's clear.
Right.
Like
yeah,
for me,
I can hear
it's jumpy. Like I wasn't hearing the whole show. Like even with you talking, I hear maybe every four words or every two words that you're speaking. But I sound clear to you?
Yeah, now I can hear you
okay.
Coming through nice and clear.
All right, well, then let's press forward with the episode because that means that the listeners are going to hear a good show. So how are you doing tonight?
I am doing just dandy. And I have to tell you, Eric, looking at these confirmations, especially, you know, I'm focused on the education confirmation, and I'm just really baffled. I had to look again at that Senate confirmation with Betsy DeVos, and I'm just floored. I am just absolutely floored. That just puts me in the mind of saying, okay, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, I consider myself a good friend of you, but you going in to have a surgery, and I say, oh, Eric, I'm going to do the surgery. I'm just going to watch these YouTube clips. You know, I'm pretty sure, like, Veronica,
well,
I respect
wait a minute
you
now,
and everything, but
say,
I need the doctor.
Don't knock
in
on
here.
You. Don't look. Don't knock on YouTube. I'm not a plumber, but I had to change out my toilet one day, and I certainly did go to YouTube, and I went.
Yes,
changed my
and that,
entire.
You
learned,
know what? If you
I learned
changing,
what a flange
fixing
was
something
and
in the house, or fixing something on your car, yes, it can be very helpful, but. If
oh, but
I'm
you're saying that if I'm
going
to operate on your brain, you don't want me to have a phone next to me with YouTube on it telling
absolutely
me to cut the frontal lobe.
Not.
I got you. I got you.
Because that's how personal education is to me. You need to know. You need to be aware of the laws. And one of the questions that really struck me again as I rewatched her confirmation hearings. I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Senator, I don't think it was Senator Sanders. I forgot what Senator that asked her, did she believe in equal accountability ability, whether it's public school, he phrased it public charter school. Do you
believe that Senator Al Franken? Was that Senator Al Franken?
No, I don't think it was Al Franken. I forgot what senator it
was. Al Franken embarrassed her. He literally embarrassed
her. Oh, yeah,
her.
He floored her. Absolutely, he floored her. But she answered when he asked her, does she believe in equal accountability? She would not answer to equal accountability. She says she believes in accountability. She did not answer to equal accountability. And this is the thing that we education advocates have been really debating about is equal protection under the law. And we do not have that right now. The same laws that apply to public schools, those laws do not apply to charter schools. So if she doesn't believe in equal accountability, that is not something she is going to push forward down the chain in education.
And this is what I'm going to say. Think of the fight, right? And you and I go back and forth about different issues concerning charter schools, traditional public schools. And I got to tell you, over the last year plus, I've learned more than I knew a year plus ago. But I've sat and I've listened. I've listened to you. I've listened to other folks. And so I had a position that is softer than the position was a year and a half ago. Meaning that there are some areas where I realize that the charter schools need to improve. So I am not, and I continue to reiterate this. I am not a 100% charter school guy. I am an advocate for great educational opportunities, one, and choice for parents, two. So that's who I am. I believe that one of the big issues is accountability and regulation. I think that the fight that parents have been having who have been opposing charters have been fighting on 15 different fronts when they should not have. The fronts that I think are the important ones are regulation and accountability.
Uh-huh.
Regulation and accountability. I think that the money argument is a ruse. I am convinced because I personally saw money come back. I've spoken to fiscal agents. The charter school gives the money back. Doesn't give the money back in real time. So if the charter school takes $30 million at the beginning of the school year because they're saying that they have that number of students that require them to take $30 million. The Board of Education writes a check to the charter school for $30 million. Now, as those kids come back, and here is the big lie that I think that was told to the parents, right, because it was an easy thing for parents to consume. They said the money doesn't follow the child back, meaning that in September or whatever the day is, that the kid goes to the charter school, the money actually goes, right? But when the kid comes back, the money is not attached to the kid to go back into the school. What happens is there's a true-up in which books are balanced, where accountants sit down and say, well, okay, how many kids came back? Okay, well, this is what you need to write us. And so that money does come back. In fact, I confirmed that with the president of the NTU, John Avagon, in an interview. So he didn't dispute that the money doesn't come back. Superintendent Cerf, president.
But let me just pause right there for a minute, Eric, because when they said the money didn't come back, that was a statement made by the Business Administration, Valerie Wilson, at a budget meeting that we was at. For one, and also later on, if they're trying to retract and say that the money comes back, the problem also was happening that the money does not come back within that fiscal year. So we can't account for that money. So just to say, if the money comes back, it's not going to come back in what we end the 2016-17 school year. So we can't account for that money.
Right. Now that I agree with. So the money, you're right. So the money does not come back in that fiscal year. But the money does come back. And so now here is the question. And but this is why I'm saying. So but if parents realize the money does come back, but it doesn't come back in the fiscal year. Well, now you ask the question, what does that mean? What does it mean if it doesn't come back in the fiscal year? How then does the school operate within that year? Now, understand, though, in that next fiscal year, the school now has that money that came back in the previous year. So essentially, I'm not going to say they have a surplus, but they have more money. I would say to you this, if there is no process for the Board of Education to have been able to figure out how to take care of those additional students with money, if the question is, and then I'd be furious if the statement rather is that school is operating at a deficit for that fiscal year, right, trying to take care of more children because they came back and they have no financial partner or no fiscal partner that is going to alleviate that pressure, and they've been just operating like that, then I have a problem. And now, I don't know if anybody's asked that question at a board meeting, but that is a question. Do you understand what I'm saying? So now that's the question. How do we
– Right, but what, guys, that question was – well, not that particular question, but the question was asked at the board meeting when they were saying that the money, you know, comes back but is not in that fiscal year where it can be accounted. And the question was asked, well, how are you budgeting? How is this money actually being accounted for? When you're saying that it does come back, it's not coming back in a fiscal year, where is it then? Where are you putting it on the side? What fund is it in just to say this money has came back from kids that were in charter school? And another unfortunate thing that happens, they can say that the money comes back, but remember, each year the funds get cut from MPS, and more additional funds is going to charter. So I mean, we're still
operating. Let's slow down. When we say more additional funds, or more funds are going to charters, right? The money follows the child. That's the only money from the Board of Education that's going to the charter school. That's the only money coming from the Board of Education going to the charter school. So if the budget for the traditional public school is being cut, so let's say there were $900 million this year. And
wait a minute, Eric. Not necessarily, because we got to remember, charter schools, when they – just to say, their money that they get from the Board of Education, they get on anticipated enrollment. So if they have this school down the street, they took over Bregoria Life Academy, if they're going to anticipate that it's going to be 400 kids in that school, that's the check that MPS is going to cut to them on anticipated enrollment.
I agree.
So that is something that also hurts MPS budget. And also, we still can't not equate the fact that we still are paying for kids that do not live in the city.
Well, that's a separate subject, right? Not one that should be brushed under the rug, but it's a separate subject. But the first subject is, and then I'm going to roll this into DeVos, and because at the end of the day, all of these issues that we're talking about, all of them, right, districts who are dealing with people who don't live in the district or in the city limits, and they are going to the school, so they're sucking up resources. How does DeVos, what is the long-term plan? What is her idea behind that? One of the other things somebody said was, you know, she doesn't understand the nuance, the other nuances within the schools within the cities, parents not being able to. You guys talked about this when Kami Anderson first introduced the One North Plan, right? And I didn't have a full appreciation for it because I've had a car since I was 19 years old. Since I was 19 years old, I've never been without a car. I've owned a car since I was 19 years old, and I'm 54 years old. So it, for me, to hear adults who don't have a car, I can't fathom that. My kid, all three of my kids who are of driving age have cars. All three of them. My 17-year-old daughter has a car. Well, she got a driver's license because she got a job now. She's a senior, but she has to be able. And so having a car expands your abilities, right? It creates possibilities for you. She couldn't have gotten it. So we live in Montclair. She's got a job in Westfield. So she goes to school. She does what she does. And then she gets in a car and goes to Westfield. So people don't have cars. It doesn't compute. But it is a reality, and I didn't know it, right? So Betsy DeVos, who's a billionaire many times over, well, she's further removed from that reality than I am. And so
absolutely,
when you have in a school system where you have folks who don't have means of transportation and now their child may be going to a school across town, which may now, and I don't want to use the word inconvenience a parent, right? Because it's beyond inconvenience. It means the difference between if I was leaving for work at 7 o'clock in order to get to work by 8:30 or 9 o'clock, but now because my kid has to go to school over there, if I can't find somebody to take him or her, then I can't head out to work until 7:45, which is going to make me 45 minutes late for work, and I'm going to now lose my job. So these
absolutely
are real issues, and the question is, as she seeks to, I'm not even talking right now about the regulations, the regulatory things that need to be in place, but just those nuances, she doesn't understand them, so she can't empathize. She can't work
absolutely
out a plan right now that says, you know what, as we devise this plan, I want to take into consideration all of these things. She can't do that. Now, I'm not saying she can't learn it or that she can't hire somebody within the framework of her office that is very, very familiar with it, right, and be able to weigh in at a table when they're having discussions about how to build an education model that's going to work for everybody in these United States. As you have somebody going, wait, I come from Newark, and that ain't going to work in Newark. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else says,
absolutely,
that ain't going to work in Detroit. Man, that needs to be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
sorry,
for her, like you said, she doesn't, for one, you can't even talk about laws and regulations, but she doesn't understand the basic thing that somebody like, you know, the average, you know, working person that does not have a car will go through. She's not understanding to things that go on in her inner cities, because what she did to Michigan out there was basically to buy the influence to advanced charter schools all over Michigan. She didn't do anything out there to help the situation. You know, it drives me nuts for a lot of these big wigs and to claim how they're helping education and stuff like that, but you have never seen them once donate to a public school, go into a public schools, buy new desks or get books or get much needed supplies. They always somehow was for education, but it only is for education when it comes to opening up a charter school. It's never for education to try to donate or get some of the problems fixed in the public school. We still have the issue going on with the lead. How many of these big wigs, billionaires and millionaires have come out to say you know, what needs to be done? Do you need filters on this? I can donate filters. I can donate money to purchase filters. Who has stepped up to the plate to do that?
Well, you know what, though? I want to say this. I want to say, yeah, you know, maybe there's some people who have stepped up to the plate. But the other thing that should have and could have happened, is that you have board members, and this is why I say, okay, so this is a perfect segue for this, and I want to get back to Devo stuff. But the idea of having a strong board, Veronica, where those people have relationships, philanthropic relationships with philanthropic organizations or philanthropists, and those people can say very specific, very specifically, I can go out and raise the money, or we can have some sort of a fundraiser to be able to bring in the dollars to get these kinds of things done. But when you have a board that's, that's very localized, and I don't mean localized in terms of living in Newark, I mean localized in terms of what they think and their network, you know, a very small network, then you're not going to be able to get those things done.
And Eric, I 100% agree with you, because the board, if at some point, if they're, you know, not getting much leeway with, just to say, the superintendent, why not try to work with the schools, whatever area of schools you're assigned to, work with them and work with other partnerships to get additional funding or what's ever needed for that school. This board, this has to be the most laziest board I have ever seen, and I don't know
long. But these are the things. To me, these are the discussions that need to be had. But you have people going to the board, and I'm not saying that the board doesn't deserve to, you know, to be taken out to the woodshed and beaten upside their heads with 2x4s. But I'm saying that they're people, that the community as a whole needs to be taken to that same woodshed and beaten upside their head with a 2x4. You can't just put it on the board. So because I, like I said. And I'm gonna put up on my website, on my social media page later on tonight, what I believe. I got a job description. I asked somebody to put together a job description for board members. And it's somebody who I highly respect, Cational Arena, for a very, very long time. And I said, based on what you understand, you know, having been in this space and worked in this space, what do you think it takes to be able to succeed? And they put this job description together for me. But the piece that I just mentioned to you about the board member having worked in a capacity where they manage budgets, large budgets if possible, where they manage large groups of people, right? A board that has dealt with philanthropy extensively, board members who have done that. Those are tools, Veronica, that when these board members make it onto the board, they can reach into their toolbox and pull out and help fix the things that are broken. But these guys go in there without a single tool in their tool belt. And then they walk in and the board is broken, right? And then we say to them, fix it. And then they're tapping their pockets, looking in their tool belt and their toolbox, and they don't have a damn tool in sight, right? And we're the ones who didn't, at the debates and other kinds of things, we didn't say to them, hey, listen, we understand what's required to fix this. I'm going to use your analogy, right? I go back to the thing. So somebody says, oh, I'm going to do brain surgery on you. The right thing that we do, and we know to do this, is to advocate for the patient. So we go and we sit down and have a consult with the doctor. We find out, especially if it's a serious surgery, and it needs to be a specialist, we may do some research on that specialist. to see how many surgeries they've done successfully, how they're viewed amongst their peers in the medical industry, right? And we're getting all of that data. So now when we're sitting down with them, we're scrutinizing it. We don't do that. And so if we take what you said, use your words, if we look at these children in education like we look at a serious surgery, then we're certainly not evaluating these board members like we would evaluate doctors. And that's a problem. And that's what I'm saying we need to be able to do. And then when we're now looking at these shortfalls and other kinds of things, people aren't patting their pockets, pulling lint out. They're able to make phone calls to people like, you know, and people, listen, people can get on Cory Booker and how that money was spent, that Zuckerberg money. The fact is that man was able to pick up a goddamn phone, make a phone call, and get $100 million. Nobody can deny that. We can argue about how the money was spent, but we can't deny that he was able to go get on a plane, fly to Silicon Valley, then pick up a phone, call Zuckerberg, get $100 million. Call Oprah Winfrey, get him on the show to talk about the $100 million. We can't deny that. You tell me one board member that can do that right now.
None of them. None of them. And
none
also,
of them. And so my question
when
is,
you,
what
when
the
you
hell
look
are we
at
doing?
Absolutely. But when you look at it, you have to blame the mayor as well, because the mayor, he puts together these fleets and he goes out. This is the mayor's team. And then you have, you know, the whole city hall and everybody campaigning and advocating, you know, put the mayor's team on there, put the mayor's team on there, and they get on these boards and they have done nothing. They have done nothing. They have not advocated for no schools. They have not got no additional funds for no schools. We had community members have come to the mic, offer them suggestions or partnerships that you can look into to partner with the schools. Community members have done that.
How many of these board members work in a private sector? Does Tave have a job? Where does Tave work? Where does Leah work? Where does Fonseca work? Where does what's the other guy's name? Effinger or whatever his name is, Selinger.
Yeah, he was a fireman. All of them, from what I can see, all of them was public sector.
They all work in the public sector, not the private sector.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And so that's another. Do you understand what I'm saying? So their network, they can't. Where they gonna go in the public sector? I mean, I'm sorry, yeah, the public sector. Where are they going to go and get money? They can't go get anything. They're clinging to their jobs, politically clinging to their jobs.
Absolutely.
So you need people, you need somebody in Newark who works for Goldman Sachs. You need somebody in Newark who works for Morgan Stanley. You need somebody in Newark who works for Chase Manhattan Bank. You need somebody in Newark who knows somebody that works, that works at Bank of America. You need somebody in Newark who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who knows Mark Zuckerberg. Those are
right,
the people
because
you need.
A lot of people, yeah, and a lot of these people that I find that work in the public sector, they get away with so much, right? They basically can do anything, not show up, and, you know, the expectations are low, you know? You have your job, you have this, and that's just about it. You know, the expectations are not high. But I suppose if you're working in a private sector, especially if you're looking to grow, you know, more and more is required of you. And especially if, you know, you're on a job and your boss or whoever sees you doing a good job and sees you doing better, so more is going to be required of you. But in the public sector, you can be kind of lax. So when they get on that board, they're lax. It's not an urgent issue for them.
Right. And so now back to DeVos. So if DeVos understood the issues facing the inner city schools, she certainly has the network. Right, and so I would love it if she was like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna reach out, you know, to all these different states, find somebody within the state or maybe somebody within a region of the state, various regions in the state, and I'm going to have them, you know, connect to this person, and we're going to immediately start seeing if we can find philanthropic dollars to take care of some of the issues that are impacting the traditional public school system, right? So we'll seek to try to do that so we don't have to, you know, just burden the taxpayer again. That would be a phenomenal thing if she did it. See, so I'm not willing to...
Absolutely, and let me say this, like you said, that would be a fantastic thing for her to do. But also, we have to keep in mind, let's face it, we still have failed leadership in NORC, right? So I would hate to say we have somebody to actually get us the funds or get us the proper partnerships we need to help our schools grow and be better than what they are. But we have some, you know, failed leadership in place that's just looking to grab hold of that money and not disseminating it correctly so where it can be effective in our schools.
Right. And so what I say is this, and I'm going to continue with the failed leadership. It's the same failed leadership that says, I don't want to sit and do anything with this Trump administration. I don't want to try to figure out how to work with them at all. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute now. If that idea that I just threw out there is, it sounds like a reasonable idea, where you say, okay, he's a billionaire. Donald Trump's a billionaire. There are a bunch of billionaires that are part of his cabinet now, right, that we're complaining about. But all of these people know where money is. And so maybe if Donald Trump is talking about improving education in the cities, maybe a guy like Steve Harvey, right, can sit down and say, hey, listen, man, you know, here's one of the things. You know, when you talk about public education, you're typically talking about going and raising taxes in order to do anything meaningful in school. Well, I don't think that we need to raise taxes. I think that what we need to do is go and see if we can secure some philanthropic dollars to get these things done. I think if we say that, if we say people like Steve Harvey or Jim Brown or Ray Lewis or some of those other cats having those kinds of conversations, then maybe we'll be getting somewhere as a, as a nation and as districts, you know, trying to, you know, do well for our children and for our parents and for our taxpayers.
Yeah, because the thing, I mean, Donald Trump, when he was running for president, he had a little information about education and stuff like that, but the thing you don't hear him talking about education or anything right now or what path he wants to go to with education. I mean, he nominated the most, so I'm sorry, I pray to God they do not let me through. I'm sorry. Do not send this lady through. But whatever the case may be, what is his policy going to be on education? He promised during the campaign to get rid of Common Core. That was one of his main things. That's why some people that I seen voted for him, because they wanted to get rid of Common Core. That was their thing. That's why they said they was voting for Trump. So I would still like to see his education policy and what he has planned. And really, not only on a national level, but on a local level, I would like to see more enforcement of our laws, that we are allocating the money that we have in a most efficient and effective way to help our schools. Like, the one thing, I had a discussion with my sister about this, and I said, that's the one thing I had this, because when my niece was in charter, I said, I did like that. I did like that she did go on a lot of school trips. And I said, well, they have, you know, they had autonomy to do, you know, a lot of different things that we are limited to, but I did like that she did that. So my thing is for public schools now, because public schools, the fact that our children are not going on as many trips, they're not participating in as many things. So if we just keep them confined in this school, through those four walls, you know, however many hours a day, where's the growth outside of that? Because that's how I am, just to say, in my personal life with my kids. I travel. I like to take them places. I want them to see and witness other things further than their zip code. So when can we, as public schools, start having more frequent trips for our kids to be able to explore more?
Well, but again, it's about budget, right? We can say the plan. What's the plan? Now, look, this is what I'll tell you. When I was a kid, I don't know how much money the school paid for stuff. We used to have to give money, right? We were going on a trip. They would say the trip cost $35. Every kid had to bring $35 in, or whatever it was, whatever the cost was. We had to pay that money. And then this was at Maple Avenue School, or even at Dayton Street School. This is what they did. And I remember being a junior, was that junior? Yeah, a sophomore at Science High School, and the class was going to Paris. I was in my French class. They were going to Paris. And I didn't go. I didn't want to go. But they had a savings plan. They had talked about it. They wanted to do it at the beginning of the year. We talked about it, and then they created an account at the bank, and then everybody had to bring in whatever you were going. You know, they broke it down in the payments, and you paid until it was done, and then all of the money was there, and then you were able to go on a trip. Now, I know some schools, like my daughter, when she was at Governor Livingston, they went to Scotland. But they knew in her freshman year that the kids were going to go to Scotland in their junior year. So we started saving for that Scotland trip starting her freshman year. So we did. Now, if you're in a district, and this is just the case, right? So now you're in a district where you say, well, okay, that's Berkeley Heights or that's somewhere else. And so these are parents who are poorer and they don't have the financial means to be able to do that. Well, we did fundraisers where you go out
Absolutely. And
sell cookies.
And,
wrapping paper. You had to sell something. But, see, we live in a community right now, Veronica, where we just want everything given to us. So you don't have the money. And they even had a hybrid of that. In some schools, if you had the money, then you just pay the money. You ain't got to sell nothing. But if you want your kid to go, you don't have the money, here's some stuff, go sell it and raise money. Veronica?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, you had went out for a minute.
You know, so
but,
did you hear what I said?
Yeah, and I totally agree. Like you said, if you don't have the money, you can fundraise. I mean, even down to trips in elementary. I remember when I was in elementary in the eighth grade class that was ahead of us. They was going to Disney World for their eighth grade trip. I remember down here at Bogor, Mr. Motley, when he was the principal, he took the eighth graders to Canada. So things like that, like you said, if you from the beginning of the school year, if it's just to say eighth grade, the beginning of the school year, the plan is already laid out. So you have that school year to be able to make payments, fundraise, or do whatever what you have to do. I mean, when my kids went to Hawthorne, they didn't go anywhere. They didn't go absolutely anywhere. And even they're not in here anymore. Hawthorne is still not going anywhere.
Right, but this is another reason. So I want you to understand this. And again, so here is the conundrum. So, and we just got to call some stuff what we got to call it. You got some lazy-ass parents who don't want to do jack. They don't. Then you have some parents who want to do, but the parents who want to do have to carry the ones who don't want to do on their shoulders in order to get something done. And the parents are tired of carrying lazy-ass, trifling-ass parents on their shoulders. to get something done. And so what some of them do is they look for the land of milk and honey, and they go to what they perceive to be a better school, which is a charter school. And now we can have the discussion, but I'm already in agreement with you that all charter schools are not good schools. And this is where I think the charter movement has done a disservice to themselves. They have not spoken up loudly enough about saying, get these failing charter schools the hell out of here, because we don't want them to damage our reputation. Those are the honest conversations. Because I'm telling you, if those charter schools were saying that, Veronica, in the community in Newark, you'd have parents who are in traditional public schools partnering with those charter schools that are kicking out those failing charter schools. You would have that. You'd have a community.
Right. You would probably have a better partnership. And I agree with you when you talk about the parents are tired of carrying the weight for other lazy parents. I had a parent where, just to say, the school year started, right? And then there was like, oh, the parents, beginning of the school year, a lot of parents are there and everybody there, they want to be all involved and they want to do this and do this. So now it's time. Now it's the doing part, right? Where you have to organize and think about what you're going to do and plan this and plan that, right? Now it's time to, execute your ideals. Ghost town. The ghost town now.
Yeah. So
that's what I mean. A lot of times they talk the talk, but they do not walk the walk.
So these are the kinds of conversations that, I'm telling you, Betsy DeVos needs to put on some jeans and some pumpkin seed shoes, right? And she needs to go hang out and eat some oxtails with some folks in the hood and let them tell her what the hell is going on. She needs that. She needs that perspective.
Yeah, she has, more than likely, yeah, it's due to the overwhelming amount of money that she has. But she is just really out of touch of what an average person reality is like. And she, and this is, I think, a disadvantage to just to say people that's kind of just born into money and all, they just kind of live in a bubble, right? They don't know what the average person is going through in life. They don't know about what the average struggles can be, because they always, been born into money. They had this, like you said, they have cars at a very early age, and like just all the luxuries of life, they just always had it. So they're not going to be able to relate to the Joe Schmo that's going, to a 9-to-5 and, just about making ends meet. They're not going to be able to relate to that. And Betsy DeVos taking the time and understanding what was going on out there in Michigan, and really sitting down and listening to some of the parents, some of the teachers, some of the community members, her thing was, shut them all down. We're going to create this charter. She's buying her way through all the legislation so they can pass laws the way she wanted to be passed. She did a real disservice, because she should have took the opportunity to educate herself and understand. It was one, the school in Michigan had freaking mold going through the walls. Hey, Betsy, walk through here. What could you do about this? So, and this is one of the gripes that I do have for just to say the charter community. You have a right, like I said, I don't knock no parents' right. You have a right to put your child wherever you want them to go. But to take on the ideal that the one track thinking, the one track mind. That you don't understand. You don't understand what's going on. You don't understand the lack of accountability. You don't understand the laws that prohibit this and allow this other place. You're not willing to understand. You just see this is what I want. I don't give a damn who gets hurt in the process. And
yeah,
on a sidebar, I'm going to tell you, because what I'm getting ready to do, I'm going to put a camera out here, because I told you I live down the street here from Bogor. And I'm going to videotape, because when these, they don't have a lot of parents walking down here to Bogor, because most of them don't live around here. So it's a lot of traffic. But I'm going to videotape, because I want to show you how reckless these parents are when they come in and drop these kids off at school. And I'm talking reckless in the terms of running red lights. And I'm going to videotape it, and I'm going to post it, because this happens every morning. I mean, they're flying, they're going through the light, and I'm not talking about going through the light or when it's safe you can turn on red. No, I'm talking going straight through the red light.
Wow.
So, I mean, like I said, you have your choice to send your kid where you want, but I think you should also respect others.
No, I agree. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, she's going to be confirmed, and we can argue and scream and holler, or we can recognize some of these issues, and we can look and say we have to figure out how to work through them. And I'm concerned that, you know, that we're being very narrow-minded, you know, and looking at this, and we need to, you know, we need to step our game up, and, you know, we need to figure out a clear partnership where we can, and understand, that she's not where she needs to be, but we need to, we need to try to ride it out with her and get her there.
Yeah, and you know, Eric, I like I was telling you before, especially with all the protests going on and a lot of protests, a lot of issues going on since Trump has been elected. But I think we, as a community, I'm all for people exercising their right to protest. You know, I don't, you know, stop nobody from doing that. But I think in the midst of all that, we have to be able to educate one another and create an action plan. It just can't be about going to hold up a sign. We have to create an action plan.
I agree. But who's going to create it?
I mean, because
a lot of the people that we have to create one.
I need to also know, how many of those people that's out there are actually registered to vote? Okay? So when you have these protests out there, have a voting booth stand.
Right.
Give some information as well.
But we keep saying that we're going to create an action plan, but we need to create an action plan. But I'm saying who and when.
Absolutely right. I mean, to me, it should have, you know, already happened. But like you said, who is going to do that? Because a lot of times somebody calls the protest. They go out there, they protest, that's it. But I think if you're have the ability enough to call the protest, you should also have something behind that. You should not just be, in my opinion, you should not just be calling the protest. You should be calling the protest, okay, we're going to protest, but this is also what we need to be doing.
I agree.
And really, you shouldn't be calling it by yourself. have a team associated with it. Okay, you're going to set up a booth here to get people registered to vote.
I agree.
Have an information booth where people need to ask questions, or where can they find information? Where can they get in touch for more information?
Yep, I agree. So we have to convince people that they have to do more, you know, than just complain. And you know, they have to get involved at a deeper level.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at it, at the end of the day, no matter what Trump does or his cabinet picks and all that, all those guys are set. They're straight no matter what. They're billionaires. So they don't need no money. So, you know, we're the actual working people in trying to do better for ourselves. Those guys are not in those positions seeking a paycheck.
Right.
All of them they're doing very well for themselves. So we need to, you know, step up our game in terms of an action plan and really honestly make sure we paying attention and documenting everything along the way.
Right.
Because, like I said, at the end of the day, Trump is going to be Trump. He's an entertainer. So that's what he's going to do throughout the time that he's president, right? He's going to do stuff to make people notice him and, you know, and like he needs that praise throughout. But it will be interesting to see really how all of this is going to play out and what the community is going to do about it. And I'm also interested to see because he has talked a lot about Chicago and the things that's going on there. What is he really going to do about Chicago?
Well, I mean, these are all things. But again, I go back to saying we have to realize that open conversation with him and his administration is what's needed. So this idea of people saying, I'm going to delegitimize the president, I'm going to argue with him every choosing, you know, at every turn, that's not going to solve anything. It's not going to solve anything. You know?
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I'm here. It's like right now, it's just a bunch of going back and forth. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Trump as the president because at the end of the day, regardless of anything, he is the president of the United States now. And I think he really needs to start acting more like it. You don't have to go after everybody who says something about you. We already know that he had thin skin. But, I mean, at this point now, it's really time. What this man is 70 years old, he needs to suck it up. If you're going to be out there in a leadership role, you're fooling yourself if you think that every single person is going to like you or your ideas.
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Veronica. Oh, now I can.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay, so I was just saying that the president now, he really needs to put his big boy pants on and stop going back and forth with any and everybody.
Right, I agree. So, look, she's got her work cut out. We have our work cut out.
Yes, we do.
I'm not prepared to put the entire burden on him. Again, I think the American people have a role to play. They have a role to play
absolutely
in their local government, right, and making sure that their congressmen and their senators are fighting for what's in the best interest of them. But this whole, which is why, Veronica, I'm going to tell you, at some point you realize, and you know politics, you know that DeVos is going to be, wait a minute, let me stop for a second, because you know that there has been, so far, two Republicans who defected. And now what they're saying is that if one more Republican drops out, says that they're not going to support her, that creates a problem, and she may not get the nomination. I mean, may not be confirmed, right? That is a possibility, unless these two Republicans were just stunting. You may get one more that does that, in which case, we'll have a whole new ball of wax. But we understand the kind of position that Donald Trump is going to
put. But they only need the one more, and that's the Jeff Sessions, because right now he's still a senator. So they would need, right, by the Democrats delaying him, they need his vote in order to confirm her. Now, the two women Republicans that backed out, that was just to save face, because at the end of the day, they didn't need their votes anyway. So as long as Jeff Sessions is able to go and vote for her, she's going to be in there. I mean, it's the most terrifying thing to me.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We shall see, Veronica.
Well, like you said, we have our work cut out.
We get caught up in all that stuff. At the end of the day, we still got stuff that we can do and that we should be doing. And so we need to be about the business of doing that. And then if when you build a house, you got to lay the first brick, right? You just don't see a house. And so let us start laying bricks. But we're being told again, don't do anything. Just don't do anything. And I think that is a wrong signal to be sent out, which is why I'll tell you, with Congressman John Lewis, I had the biggest issue with him for saying that the president wasn't legitimate and almost taking a tone that said he was going to be defiant. And then some of the people within the Democratic Party, black folks in particular, saying they weren't going to work with him. And then when I looked and saw that a guy like Chuck Schumer said he was going to work with him and Cuomo said he was going to work with him, I looked and said, well, we need to be doing the same thing where we can work together. And then when we can't, then we do battle. But let's get what we can get out of this thing. Let's start there first. Anyway,
right.
We have work to do, and next Thursday we'll talk about whether or not she was confirmed, and then we'll start to look to see how we how we move forward. We'll be.
And not
always,
only that, we can and just on the last note, we need to take a look at our own felt leadership with our own in our own communities.
I agree. So when is the next? You want to give the time and date of the next board meeting?
Yes,
the
next
that?
Board meeting. Oh, wait, I thought I had it. I was pulling it up here now. But it was a meeting tonight to discuss the leases within the charter school. So that went on tonight. And the next meeting, So that meeting went on tonight for the charter school leases. And the next meeting is, February 21st is the business meeting, as always, at 2 Cedar Street. And the regular meeting is February 28th, and it's going to be at Westside High School at 6 o'clock.
All right.
The business meeting starts at 5:30.
So that's the work that we can be doing, and that's where we should be. Thanks again, Veronica. I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Opportunities for real change.